Welcome to the Retail Reality Show.
Welcome to another episode of the Retail Reality Show. It's summer is almost gone. I'm Nino Bergfeld, your host today. Unfortunately, Martin can't join. But nevertheless, it's a big, big pleasure for me to have Adriana Hoppenbrauer today from The Fabricant. If you don't know The Fabricant and Adriana, don't worry. So Adriana is one of the 100 Web3 women of the future. Former positions working at Nike, Hunkemöller and Hema. So big fashion background, which is great. And together we take a joint look or a glimpse into the future of fashion. So welcome, Adriana, and thanks for joining. Where do we find yourself today?
Thank you, Nino. I'm in Amsterdam in the true autumn is starting. So rain, a little bit of sun. That's how it is meant to be here. And and thank you very much for the invitation. Looking forward to chat with you about, I know, of course, you for a while and your passion for retail. Retail is also my background, and I think it's really nice to have a conversation about how retail is evolving into this digital realm, to a new immersive experience, and when Web3 technology comes into place. So yeah, a lot to cover.
I fully agree, and I think we could talk for 2 hours, so I need to be precise and concise. So for those who don't know Fabricant, and you just mentioned we know each other for quite a while. We got to know each other via a common friend. And I was impressed by what you're doing and by your history. So maybe you can quickly talk about who or what is Fabricant, why you founded it, and what are you doing at The Fabricant?
Yeah, so The Fabricant is the first digital fashion house that was launched in 2018 in Amsterdam. We have three founders. I come from a retail physical fashion background. Our other founder, Amber Sloten, is a fashion designer that was the first graduate in the Amsterdam Fashion Institute with a digital-only collection, which was very new back then in 2016. And Carrie Murphy, who is a technologist from the visual effects and the film industry. And I think the three of us were united into this vision that actually there is a new industry emerging, or there is an opportunity to create a new industry for fashion based on digital only. And why is that? Is when we think about fashion, what is fashion, why we buy fashion, is to express our identity, right? And that's why we dress differently. And where are we expressing our identity most of the time is online. Right, where are our social networks being created online? So where are we going to dress to impress digitally? And if that's the case, why couldn't we create digital items for our online lifestyle, for our digital lifestyle, and create a business out of it? In 2018, felt like a thesis, which nobody understood. So in the early days of The Fabricant, we were servicing the fashion industry, helping them on their digitalization, primarily to reduce physical samples. Mm-hmm. So for example, create digital showrooms, create marketing materials that didn't require a physical sample, right? And it was a very strong business case because there was a saving component, there was a sustainability component, and there was also a creative component. But our ambition was beyond just being an agency. Our ambition was really to create these this digital fashion industry. And then we were very fortunate to experience blockchain very early. So in 2019, we created the first digital dress on chain, which sold for 54 ETH, back then around $10,000. And as of suddenly, we got world attention. Like, what's happening here? Somebody's willing to pay $10,000 for a dress that doesn't exist, right? In the world of, in the eyes of the world, it doesn't exist. While it does exist digitally, and that helped us to unlock the monetization stream of what we're trying to do, and actually really concentrate our efforts from 2019 onwards. Our R&D efforts were all concentrated on creating this platform that would allow anybody to build their digital closet, to buy, to co-create, customize, and wear digital fashion in the digital lifestyle, mm-hmm. right? And moving now forward to where we are today, that's what we do. We have a platform where brands and designers can drop their collections and they can sell it. And whoever buys it has the opportunity to wear them in different occasions, in different digital occasions.
So impressive, and maybe just summarizing what you just said. So three people, a designer, a tech person, and someone who understands the fashion industry very well, yourself, working for Nike, who is very successful in digital fashion, or Hunkemöller, have met, and you built a, or based on a vision you just mentioned, based on self-expression and creating a digital identity in a virtual space. So that means obviously creating a platform or a tech platform where big brands, like again, Nike, Adidas, and your customer roster is quite impressive, can build virtual fashion items. So I guess that would, or you already mentioned the business case. You started with the sampling process, which is quite laborious and quite expensive in the fashion industry. You started with that, but it's even bigger now, because you enable brands to create an entirely new product and also revenue stream. Sounds like a CFO's dream, right?
Yeah, 100%. And it's like we see it as a new business model for the industry. And the cool thing is because we have been doing it for such a long time, we also have been leading very much leading that industry on the forefront, and partnering with brands that are super interested to understand that business case. So recently we had a drop with a really cool brand, and we had what we call a digital twin collection. They had a mm-hmm. collection that was physical, and we created the digital equivalent. And the digital equivalent was at a much lower price than the physical one. Mm-hmm. And the digital equivalent, you could wear it with AR filters. And we were able to sell more units digital than physical. And the total revenue generated by the digital collection increased the revenue of that brand, the collection, the full collection, by 12%.
Wow.
With, of course, a much higher margin. I can't tell.
Okay, don't.
But it's one of our recent drops. And I think that is a great use case that we are now, it's great to have the theory, right? Mm-hmm. But we are able to actually back that with true experience of what is happening. And I think a big part of where we are good at mm-hmm. Is being able to stop and review and learn and build that learning for ourselves, but also to all the partnerships that we have in our, as I said, in our groups, to benefit from that knowledge.
Devils. Advocate.
So Adriana, before we deep dive too much, and it's very interesting what you said, obviously there's a lot of upside for brands and additional revenue streams, a much shorter and cost efficient supply chain, because you don't need to source raw materials and so on. Who really needs virtual fashion items? Because if you talk to my parents, where I was at the weekend, they don't know how to wear a digital fashion item. So maybe it would be great if you can talk to a little bit around who is wearing those things and who is requesting those. Where are we? We're here.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I would say the now, and I would say the next, right? Right now, we sell primarily to people that love fashion and are innovators. So a lot of our clients, I would say, our users, come from the Web3 space. They just love the idea mm-hmm. of the innovation we are bringing. They actually care less about wearing, they care more about being part of that movement. Mm-hmm. So that is one third is that profile. They're, just like in any innovation, we're having the early adopters, right? Which typically are excited about the tech.
I'm one of them.
Exactly. It's the people that queued for the first iPhone kind of thing, right?
That's how we met.
Then we have the creators, which is a big part of our community, are creators. They are fashion creators. They are visual effects creators. And they love to buy the items because we give away the files. And then they have the rights to use those files in their creation, whether it's in a movie, whether it is in an art project, whether it is with their clone for Clone X, for example. A lot of people buy to wear on their avatar. So that is the second, I would say, group that buys digital items right now. And the third one, again, within our platform, is people that just love fashion. And they are going to be wearing AI filters because they are showing a new way to express themselves. You know, these are typically people that are in the fashion industry, a stylist, or they are influencers within fashion, and they are looking for new ways to express themselves to their user base, to the fans, to the community, right? Moving forward, what I believe is that I typically get this question from indeed the generation that is kind of, you know, beyond early millennials, beyond the young millennials, right? Like my parents. When I look at my kids, I have a teenager at home. She's talking with her friend, and her friend is wearing a strawberry hat on Snap.
An augmented reality filter, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how they communicate, right? And then while they're talking, they change into a rabbit, right? So for them, this is the way they're expressing themselves. They're expressing their emotions. They're playing. They're having fun. Then I have a niece that is like always on Roblox, right? That she's changing her clothes. There's a reality that's part of her reality, right? My other daughter is in Fortnite all the time, playing with friends remotely. She's changing her skins all the time, right? So I feel that for us, it's too hard to understand a certain generation, hard to understand, while for the Gen Zers and beyond, there's just life as it is. And that's why the estimates of the predictions are pretty like impressive when you look at McKinsey saying this is going to be digital fashion is going to be $150 billion by 2027. Is because actually there are already enough streams of revenue being made in the gaming environment into the digital fashion blockchain-enabled, let's call it NFTs, right? Into the new business models, which is digital to physical, physical to digital. That is areas that we're exploring. They're already existing, and we are getting into that pivoted moment to go from early adopters to actually majority adopters to mass adopters, right? And that is happening really fast. One of the avenues is gaming. Another avenue, which I believe is, because it already exists, is filters, right? And I think there will come, again, new business models that are being adopted will get into scale pretty soon.
Okay, you pretty much also confirmed my assumption. And always when I do a speech or meet some customers, I always ask people just to raise their hand if they have kids. And then second question would be, who is in Fortnite? And third question, whose kid is spending their pocket money on ice cream versus skins? Yeah? And the famous Balenciaga skin in Fortnite, I think that's just one example. And it's such a big, big ecosystem they have created, and also revenue stream. Yeah, you just mentioned. So I think it would be a false assumption if you're a fashion brand and you're just thinking about your existing clientship buying a virtual fashion item in an augmented reality filter you just mentioned on Instagram or Snap versus a game. But if you look at your future consumers, I think the world is totally different, and you should have maybe started yesterday.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's shocking that Fortnite is a bigger fashion house than Balenciaga in revenue.
Crazy.
Right? Yeah. So the Fortnite sells $3 billion in skins. It's bigger than most fashion brands. And I think that the paradigm shift is super interesting to think, because we see Fortnite as a game. I see Fortnite as a retailer of fashion.
Yeah, fully agree. And also lots of experiences are moving there. If you look at what was the musician doing?
Travis Scott.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Travis Scott. It was pretty impressive. There are a lot of YouTube videos still. If you haven't seen it in the audience, just I would encourage you to watch it. Pretty cool.
Yeah, which kind of you know, imagine building a brand that you're able to create experience like that, that you're able to fuse music, fashion, art into the same space, right? Mm. And that is like, this is one of the things we say is a brand doesn't sell products, a brand sells a story, right? The reason why we pay, well, I don't, maybe you pay $4,000 for a Louis Vuitton bag, it's not because the leather is great or because it's, you know, because there is craftsmanship. No, it's because we want to portray a certain lifestyle to the world, right? We buy into the story. Mm. We buy into the image. When you can enrich that story to actually add new components and make part of your brand, you can take it much further. So one of the things, just to illustrate that, we have launched our immersive fashion show during New York Fashion Week, and we're gonna have two events that actually are VIP only, so that you can attend and be part of the fashion show. Mm. And as of Sunday, is a show that you're not sitting on the row for 15 minutes watching, you know, people pass by. But it's actually a show that you get in, and it's a treasure hunt to find where the clothes are. And it's a narrative that you follow, a story that you follow, and takes place in a forest. Oh, and wow. it's a secret brave. So there is music, there is this beautiful, like, realistic landscape built with Cornerstone, in Cornerstone Land, which is a metaverse space. Mm-hmm. Build all in a real engine is like beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you are approaching these characters wearing these fantastic clothes designed by Amber, and you can interact with the people that are in the space, but also interact with the characters, you know, come close by, come around it, something that you would never experience in a regular fashion show, mm-hmm. right? And that's just an example of how that narrative of fashion can evolve when we start to operate in the intersection of gaming technology mm-hmm. and fashion craftsmanship.
Yeah. Would you say, or how do I engage? Do I use a browser, the traditional browser to enter?
Yeah, so it's going to be, you can enter through your computer, so you don't need like any different hardware or any gaming console or anything. You can interact in your phone or in the computer, and it also like gives access to many more people to experience the brand. Right now, a fashion show, you get maybe 300 people. While right now in principle you can get as many people as you want, and we are using it as a reward for our loyal fans. So we're inviting our loyal fans and also inviting media and of course like some friends. But imagine that you're able to, you know, bring your brand to anybody mm-hmm. in that way. Bring your narrative to be experienced by any of your brand fans.
Maybe we can even put a link in the show notes if it's possible to just enter such an environment. Would be great, I think, for our audience to learn something new and experience something new.
Yeah, cool.
Maybe you can send me a link afterwards.
Yeah, I'll send you a link of the video of the show. Well, it's actually not the video of the show, but the video of the collection. To have access to the show, you need to be a holder of the Fabricant collection.
Okay. So maybe we can encourage people to become a holder. You just said one important thing, to reward people. And this is also a big passion of mine, consumer centricity and loyalty. So we also had a recent show on the future of loyalty. Where we discuss a lot, and I think especially the big brands and powerhouses, they play with scarcity, obviously. Yeah, it's very pricey, the Louis Vuitton bag, or they do a limitation on the availability. Adidas, I think, is doing a great job here with their sneakers. I think this is also such a great component of future loyalty schemas, to give away, let's say, limited seats in a virtual fashion show, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think that, but also think about that you can give away the digital item so people can play with it. Mm. And while they play with it, they are actually being the ambassadors of the brand, right? So I feel that there are so many new models that are going to come in the intersection of physical and digital, in the intersection of again, loyalty and ownership. One of the things that we love is co-creation. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we did a project with Adidas, which Adidas gave away the patterns of the jackets, which mm-hmm. is like the most valuable IP of Adidas, right? Arguably. Giveaway to creators. We had 1,500 creators participating, and all of them made art creations using that jacket. And we select the best 20, and we auctioned those best 20 on behalf of the creators. And the creators got the basically the money out of the auction, right? And a brand doing that to this core niche of diehard fan of the brand that also created, that are actually creating art like of such a so beautiful, Nila, like of the highest quality, right? That to me is next level loyalty. Is when you're not giving points, you're not giving goods, you are actually enabling creativity. You're giving your brand, you're helping creators to for them to actually professionalize, monetize. I think that is like a true reward system.
Great. So I need to closely watch that 100% because I also I'm a big fan and a big believer that this traditional top-down brand system is or won't be there in the future. It's much more being a platform than just top-down someone who dictates products. And I think you just gave a brilliant example that is again powered by blockchain, I guess, and NFTs, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's an enablement indeed, like a brand that enables. I had once I was watching a super interesting presentation that is like brands, you know, where strong brands are actually brands that allow you to play, right? That's the emotion we want to have. Like you can play with the brand and they are enabling that play. And I think that is a good example of what we like to do. Just like how can we stretch beyond just the normal buy deeds, but actually how can a brand enable playing and entertainment and fun and you buy as a consequence rather than as a primary reason.
One of the big criticisms of those virtual environments and metaverse, 1 year ago we would have talked now about metaverse, right now it's rather GPT, but if you stay with those virtual worlds, one of the big criticisms is it's less immersive. In Corona and COVID times, obviously everybody was at home and digital searched and exploded because people couldn't do anything else. But now you can also see it in e-commerce and stores. It's changing. People want to meet again. What would you say? How will this develop? Also looking at big tech players like Meta and also, Apple investing in spatial, Apple Vision Pro, for example, the new generation of the Oculus. What would you say will do this to what you just said in the virtual world?
I think it's less or and is end. You know, it's not that digital is going to replace physical, but I think it's actually I don't think it's already happening. It's going to augment is another layer. That will be added to human connections. And again, going back to my daughter who plays Fortnite with the friends, she's in a sofa with her earplugs on and the friend is in his house and they are playing Fortnite and talking to each other, right? And I think like, is this enhancing their connection or is this disconnecting? I think, and to me it's enhancing. They are having a pretty cool time together. You know, it's fun, it's play, it's entertaining, it's strategizing, which for kids I think is super cool. And they make an appointment. You know, at 4 o'clock we're going to play Fortnite and everybody jumps in, right? And create the teams. And so and still they meet at school and they meet at the street. So I think it's another opportunity. I do feel that when... you know, Oculus becomes a reality, that layer is going to bring so much more to that merge of the two. I, of course, we play with technology all the time here. So we have VR glasses. And every time I go into a VR experience, I'm left like, you know, impressed and a bit like a bit choking up just because it's still quite clunky, but it's like you truly immerse yourself in another reality. And the connections are actually quite deep. You meet somebody in VR and you have conversations that you would maybe not have in real life, right? Because of course you're not necessarily representing yourself, so you can be, you know, an animal or whatever you want to choose. And I feel that that allows for actually quite a few deep conversations that maybe I wouldn't dare to have in the pub. You know what I mean? So I don't see, I'm in general, I'm just a tech positivist. I think that what's happening, it has so much potential to enhance human creativity, to enhance our power of innovation, creation, of connections. And when I see through the lens of the younger generation, they are already doing it. When I see through our own lens, you know, how many hours are we in Zoom calls or Google Meets the whole day, right? So it's already happening. We have remote teams who we wouldn't be able to meet otherwise. And I think it's a bless that I'm able to see them, feel them, because we have video calls, right? 10 years ago, that didn't exist. So I see more positive than negative, and I think it's in summary, it's going to enhance human connection rather than the other way around.
Yeah, fully agree. I think it's not an either or, it's an and. It will be a good mix in the future of digital, virtual, and physical. And we will get back to that point, because you just where we talked about a few components. One of the common components is obviously immersiveness, and all the tech players around, like Nvidia and Apple and so on. But before we deep dive too much into this, one, let's say, overarching question is also on the future of ownership and digital fashion, which is, you mentioned it already, blockchain and NFTs. So all of a sudden, you can not just own the physical 4,000 Louis Vuitton, 4,000 euro Louis Vuitton handbag, you can also own a virtual version, and this is all backed up by an NFT or a token or whatever you want to call it. All of a sudden, you can own a digital thing. The big thing is just right now, it seems like GPT has eaten the blockchain lunch and nobody's talking about it anymore. So what would you say, where are we in this hype cycle or whatever you want to call it? If in Gartner terms, it's a hype cycle, where are we at the moment? And how will this develop? And the third question might be, or I have, is what will do this to mass adoption in the future? Because you need a wallet, for example, if you want to own a piece of digital fashion backed by an NFT. So that was a long question, but we can untangle it again.
Yeah, yeah. I think the first thing, it's good that it's not a hype anymore, you know, because actually now serious players are building with the tech. At the end of the day, Web3 NFTs is a technological layer that is being built on top of the internet that we know. And I'm wise enough to have lived the internet, all the waves of internet, and I was in the mobile industry as well when mobile was booming. And I tell the kids here at work, I said, guys, I've seen it, and if anything, this is a good thing that is happening. Because when I graduated then from my master's, I was in London and it was the dot-com boom. And it was the same craze. There were so many new internet businesses and startups happening, right? All everywhere. And every single company felt, I need to have a dot-com. I don't even know what to do, but I need to have a presence online. And most of those startups don't exist anymore. Actually, there was the burst. And everybody went bankrupt. But actually what happened is that the build continued, and internet as we know today was built on the back of it, right? And the difference is that, and I think the difference that we're seeing right now is from hype projects to true projects with value, to from user experience that the early adopters can handle because they're curious, to actually focus on user experience for the masses, right? From the clunkiness of wallets to actually even walletless. Right now, you can own your assets and store them without necessarily having to go through the process of 2 years ago where you had to create a wallet and was quite tedious with seed phrases of 10 words long kind of thing. That doesn't exist anymore, right? From payments that require the crypto buying and transferring to actually pay with credit card. So I think we are in a really good wave and paving the wave for mass adoption through a better user experience, which is the sign up, the payment, but also just the overall experience, right? Mm-hmm. So in our case, we made a big effort to have a credit card payment, to use the easiest wallet system, because ultimately we want the entire industry to benefit and to create mass adoption, right? We feel that those were the initial barriers. I'm a big believer that the next year, and I would say probably between the next 2 years, is one that is going to unlock the potential of blockchain as a technology. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to be talking about it. We're not, we're already not talking about NFTs, whether because it's a bad name or because just like it's becoming a layer of technology, we shall see. But I really believe it is about putting technology where it belongs, which is on the back, and creating just amazing user experiences.
100%. I think I always love to give a talk about the MP3 example. I bought a lot of MP3s when I was younger. And now nobody's talking about MP3 anymore, but the technology behind compressed audio is everywhere. Right? It's in Spotify, it's in Apple Music, it's everywhere.
I love that. That's a good one as well.
Yeah. Talking about ecosystems, because now we have talked a lot about lots of components, so immersiveness and virtual reality. We have talked about the blockchain and NFTs. What would you say, which components need to be developed and maybe even completely entirely new technologies and also players on the canvas we will see today, maybe, and also in the future? We just mentioned a few: NVIDIA product lifecycle management software, which creates the 3D asset renderings. So maybe you can talk a little bit about the ecosystem that needs to be created in order to make digital fashion a reality.
Very good one. I think that one of the challenges of digital fashion is that there isn't MP3 or HTML. There isn't one single file type or language type, right? So if I'm having an item for Roblox, it's a very different definition than if I'm having an item for AR filter, which is very different than if I'm having an item of highest fidelity in Unreal Engine 5. So a lot of the work we put is creating, the technical word is pipelines, to translate those files, to compress them differently, to design them differently for this several different experience, right? So I think what we need is that machine that you put in and you get everything distributed in the right way, or one single language source that can read those files, and then the end source will, enable them to be seen and experienced differently. We believe that is our role to do it. So that's why we invest a lot on all those pipelines. Mm-hmm. And right now we have, if you buy an item with the fabricants, we create the pipeline for the augmented reality filters. We create the pipeline for Red Player Me avatar, and we create the pipeline for Unreal Engine.
Red Player Me and Unreal, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have all, and we are also working, and that's where NVIDIA comes into play, which is a really, really great partnership. We're also working in the pipeline for AI, which means that we can create content using a digital item and create imagery or video of that somebody wearing that digital item, either yourself or a model that you decide. And that unlocks, of course, a lot of other use cases. But I feel that is a vacuum right now we are working on, other people working on, but it's one of the challenges for digital fashion specifically, right? Avatars are different. So it's like when you think, digital doesn't have sizing. Well, actually it does, because depending on the avatar, you need to resize it. And the way we design really, like, we have fashion designers in-house, so we truly design garments. And we're now talking to our designers, is there a way that we can just expand the garment, or do we need to redesign in sizes for MetaHumans, for example? A few still hurdles to go through, And it's the non-sexy part of the business, I would say, but yeah. very much needed. And I think anybody that's working on those problems are very important ecosystem players for us. Mm-hmm. I think the other side of the ecosystem is hardware, right? So every single industry that went from early adopters to mass adopters had a strong hardware component. Mm-hmm. Think about social media with mobile being a really strong hardware component, right? So I feel that there is a lot of expectations on the next generation of glasses, Apple launching next year. Mm-hmm. What will that mean? You know, what use case will it unlock for digital fashion? Will it be something that adds to the hardware? Still on the hardware, but more on capacities. Isn't it like network capacity, GPUs? Mm-hmm. That is also needed. Because if we stream experience right now, like the experience we are streaming, mm-hmm. the fashion show, we can't do it for millions. We need to create rooms with a few hundred, right? Mm-hmm. Fortnite, Travis Scott, had millions of visitors, but were actually rooms of 100 people mm-hmm. in okay. parallel because the streaming capacity is not there yet to mm-hmm. really host 100 million people at high definition. So that's also happening. And I think it's something that's going to help to accelerate. And all of this is happening at such a fast pace. You know, AI helps a lot, I believe, in that, and will help a lot in that pipeline development, in the creation as well of items. So from a kind of supply point of view, that will also accelerate the availability for sure.
Mm-hmm. That would have been my next question. You just anticipated what role will AI play in GPT in the creation process, in the process of creativity?
Yeah. We're so into it. I don't know about you, but I use ChatGPT like every day and
more
reduce.
Than Google now.
Yeah, exactly. More than Google these days, exactly. So shocking. And it's only going to get more, and we really incentivize our teams to play with it all the time. But I feel in a nutshell, AI enhances human capacity to do the boring stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great to see the visual tools that are available, but ultimately there is a layer of curation, taste, and even prompting that it still needs to be done through the eyes of a human, right? And if anything, I feel that is a really interesting work relationship with the computer, with the bot. Mm-hmm. So I was doing copywriting, and then I was like, okay, ChatGPT, do this. And then I was like, okay, now with humor. And then, okay, now with 10% less humor and more witness, you know, mm-hmm. like, And that kind of is almost if you have like a little slave doing everything you want without complaining, which is great.
Yeah.
But it still needs that curation, right? It needs that fine-tuning layer. Mm-hmm. What I do believe is that there will be an abundance of creativity or I would say creative expression, mm-hmm. A higher abundance. But just like in anything, I can paint, but you're not going to buy my painting. It's not good, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel what we're going to see, as in every industry, is where there is abundance, there is always still the recognized craftsmanship and the pinnacle of it mm-hmm. and the taste level and the expression level. There's always going to be space for that. But it's going to create potentially a fast digital fashion, a fast fashion digital, which we have in the physical world, I think now is going to become available digitally as well.
Okay. So fast fashion, virtual or digital fast fashion powered by GPT. I like that. I like that. And I think it's not always, I mean, when I talk and think about GPT and AI, that there's this creativity angle. We just talked about the product creation and getting really creative with the human in the middle, creating the right prompts. But on the other hand, I think there's lots of boring stuff that you can automate. And I think in fashion, if you go to a typical e-com website, the content is very bad, the product content. I think, and I visited a customer last week, big global fashion house. They are running pilots at the moment, taking or ingesting 3D imagery and 3D models And then GPT creates the product content out of the 3D model, sizing. So very cool, very interesting, and solves a massive issue in this fashion industry.
Yeah, I know that. Oh, that's super cool. Yeah, no, 100%. I think the boring piece is like number one unlock. But the interesting thing, like the AI project that we are on, I would say that we have an MVP built, is actually one of our brand partners saw it as an e-commerce solution as well, because we are able to create super high fidelity content through just having the 3D file. So companies that are designing all 3D, you can actually start creating brand photography through AI.
Yeah. I saw also a demo in the same spot where I was. So they shoot the product from various angles and various lighting. But typically, one retailer needs a green background, the other retailer needs the red background, and they just start to do this with AI, because you can just prompt it and say, hey, put this jacket in front of a green background with a little bit of a cloudy sky, whatever it is, hiking gear versus high fashion. So yeah, there, I think there's lots of boring stuff you can automate.
Yeah, 100%. But imagine that, again, the fidelity is so good for the models that you can actually prompt on this style. And you just create like a limited amount of photography to populate your website. And then you can also start showing sizing, which, as you know, it's really hard to do sizing photography because you need to have all the models lined up, you need to have the product lined up, and all of that is a massive operation. But imagine that you can actually just with the files and prompting, creating also expressions of different sizings for the website.
It's also interesting from a let's say, model or also influencer perspective, because all of a sudden you don't need to travel anywhere. Yes, where the fashion brand needs to pay for the travel, you can just license your influencer avatar, whatever it is, and then the brand can apply the 3D model to it. I think also pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. It's gonna. I think the industry is gonna commoditize a lot, right? But yeah, in fact, you can create the influencer in the computer, you can create the model in the computer, you don't even need, it's just like your standard e-commerce model, right? It's not like a GG. then you can just basically create it.
I'm following Lil Miquela. I'm not sure if you have heard of her, follow her on Instagram. So pretty impressive since a few years, virtual avatar or virtual influencer blended with real world people, so also pretty interesting.
I know the team quite well. It's a pretty impressive project. It's it's very interesting.
Cool. So I think lots we covered already a lot of ground. Very interesting. We are getting towards the end. One of the big questions, so let's say putting myself in the shoes of a fashion brand listening in, I would question or having my traditional supply chain in mind, some big fabrics in Asia, sourcing raw material, assembling the shoes or the shirts. Now I want to start with this, and the supply chain looks completely different. So maybe we can spend a few minutes on how does this future supply chain look like? What do I need to do as a fashion brand? Which resources do I need? Which software? We mentioned PLM software, for example. So maybe if you can just focus a little bit on the future of the digital supply chain, that would be very interesting, I think, for many.
Yeah, like enough, there are quite a lot of brands already doing it, right? So, but I think the starting point starts with design. So start designing 3D. Really educate the designers into the tool. And there are two, I think, dominant tools in the market, Clo3D, which is the one we use, or Browseware. Once you educate your designers and they start designing in 3D, it enables to reduce the samples, because right now, once you design, you give it to the factory ship a sample, you give remarks and you ship it back, right? So you cut all of that. Then you need to educate your factories, which again, a lot of factories are already even ahead of the suppliers, ahead of the brands, they have educated themselves to read those files and to have the confidence of not producing samples. Once you have those 3D files in place, then the fun stuff, which I like, comes into place, which is, again, to your point, you don't need to do your web, your e-commerce photography anymore, because you can use AI with your 3D file, create the photography, right? Your marketing assets, the same. And then you can go into, with us, creating a new business model, because you have those 3D files, we can actually start making them digital only. You can start thinking about making digital first. So you buy the digital and then you have the physical, right? Which is on-demand production, which is of course super interesting for the industry. You can start plugging those assets into gaming, into AI filters. So the starting point is very much start designing in 3D.
And this is, I think, a big challenge, because it sounds easy and like a very easy undertaking. But if you talk to the fashion brands out there and you ask them, and I did, funnily enough, last week, I think it was 20 or 30% of their design process was or is digital at the moment. 70% is still no content, no 3D models, no dream, what we just discussed.
Yeah. It's a change management process for a company. You know, it's like going from paper to digital is a red one, but you know, the brand, they use digital software, but 2D. So it's about educating the designers to use 3D, but so we have designers in-house and, you know, it's actually quite intuitive once you get hold of it, but it's a change management process. I think most brands, as you know, the brand industry, the fashion industry is so quick. You don't have the space even to brief. You finish a collection, you start the new one, right? Yeah. So they're like, when can I train the people? And it's going to, you know, set us back before we can move forward. So a lot of them choose to have companies next to them building the 3D and then step by step going and sourcing it back. For brands that want to just experience that last mile, as I said, like new digital models, we do the 3D files for them and through capsule collections, right? And in the early days of our existence, we would do catalogs and catalogs of 3D files for brands, really translating the 2D to 3D. We don't do that anymore, but there are companies that do that as well.
Okay.
It's more like there is no excuse to not start. Let's put this way.
Okay. It's interesting. So I think I now understood the fabricant fully, what you're offering. just maybe some final question or some, let's say, deep dive, because we already talked about a few customers of yours. And if you look into on your website, Off-White, Sony, H&M, Puma. So I think the who is who in the fashion brand is already in your customer roster. I really like the Tommy parallel. So maybe if you can maybe drop a few cool projects you did recently where the listeners can just zoom in and maybe experience themselves what an AR filter looks like or how they can get a piece of virtual fashion in their wallet. So it would be great to maybe just talk about some very tangible live projects in the end.
Yeah, very nice. So I'll mention two. We did in July, we did a drop with Highs Nobiety. And the cool thing about the Highs Nobiety is we had a digital only collection. So for the first time, they had a digital only collection. Not in Paris, exactly. With AF filters. But the interesting thing I thought about it is that we had a retail presence, a physical retail presence with the digital item.
Oh, okay.
And for them was new as well. So basically, we had an installation with a big screen with a QR code. Where you could actually purchase the item in the real store. And everything else was physical hanging around. So I thought that was such a cool new take of retail experience, right? Where you can actually play with the item in a different way and buy your digital item there.
Where was the store? If it was
not
in Paris?
It was in Paris. It was in Paris.
It
was in Paris. It was a pop-up store during Paris Fashion Week, Men's Paris Fashion Week.
Beautifully
done by the team, the Highs Nobiety team does it really well. But again, it was a new take on experience, you know, how to merge digital and physical. So I really like that one. The Tommy parallel, as you mentioned, really interesting bold move from the Tommy team, created this sub-label, Tommy Parallel, to try new digital models. It's really like meant to be innovation sandbox for them, mm-hmm. where they can actually launch different initiatives and learn from it. And the one we launched together was the Unlimited collection. So we created the Limitless collection. We created designs that were a take from the physical items, but we create them digital only. So they were kind of redesigned. Mm-hmm. And if you bought them, you could use them for a game. So it's super interesting to see the adoption of the idea, right? How many people actually bought and played the game, mm-hmm. how many minutes they stay in the game. And yeah, we're just learning together. We were doing the tear down last week with the team. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just super interesting to see how a brand that is built on physical is trying to bring their fan into this space, like back to where we started, becoming an enabler for people to experience something new, mm-hmm. right? And it has been fascinating.
Cool. So Tommy Parallel and the other one, High Snobiety. So I guess there are also YouTube videos. We can maybe put some stuff in the show notes.
Will do.
Great. So I think that was an amazing glimpse into the future of fashion. We talked about a lot. We talked about, let's say, the macro environment, all the players that are there already, like NVIDIA or the product lifecycle management. The spatial computing we mentioned, but we also talked about consumers and who the future consumers are. And I think everybody or all those building blocks need to fall into the right place in order to become mass adopted. But I'm very optimistic, and I think this will be a dream for not only the consumers but also for the CFOs of big fashion powerhouses, because there's a CMOs, because there's a big business case behind, and also a big marketing story. Thank you, Adriana, for being here today. I know you're very busy, and I hope to see you soon in the real world or even the virtual world.
Amazing. Thanks so much, and you know, it's super nice to talk to you, and you know, you know so much about fashion retail. This we got into a really good conversation.
Yeah, I liked it too. Thank you.
Yeah.
See you soon.
Super nice. See you soon.
Goodbye.
The Retail Reality Show with your hosts, Martin and Nino, is presented by Blank and Salesforce. For more information, check out our website, retailrealityshow.com.